This is the 200 Churches Podcast, episode 179.
But goodbye for our children, it doesn't just represent, okay, we had a great time at this church and we'll see you, or maybe we won't see you. It represents, we said goodbye and we're not going to see our grandparents for 5 more years. Or we said goodbye to our friends that we played with every day. Or we said goodbye and our whole life changed in a day because we got off the plane in a different country. And so we really try to protect our children in that way and come up with things of, hey, do you want to give a fist bump? Or would you like to say goodbye? And if they say no, we leave it and we say goodbye as adults and then it's finished. Or we say, see you later. See you later is a little bit different. It's a way to close and to end well, but it's not a goodbye. And so we really are very aware of the losses that our children accumulate just because this is the life that God's called us to.
Welcome to the 200 Churches Podcast, where every Wednesday we produce a fresh episode of ministry encouragement for pastors of small churches. Now here are two guys who, like you, serve in the trenches of small church ministry, the Coke and Pepsi of ministry podcasts, Jeff and Johnny.
This is the 200 Churches Podcast. I'm Johnny Craig, and I'm here with my gorgeous co-host.
Crazy Johnny, they call you, huh?
They do.
I heard that from somebody.
What's his name?
Dick Hawley?
Hawley, that was it. Yeah, Dick Hawley.
Reverend Hawley from Lock Haven, Pennsylvania.
He called me today, and he said, I'm Jeff's friend. I don't know if Jeff told you that he has a friend.
Well.
So it was very dry.
But all my friends are 30-year friends and over. Yeah, I literally haven't made any new friends in the last 30 years except you.
I'm glad to be on the list. It makes me feel, you know, a little better.
Well, it's the cool factor for me.
Is that because I'm 29? You felt like you had to...
Once...
There was a 30-year gap. You had to get a new one who was 30.
Well, you weren't around 30 years ago.
That's exactly
so,
right.
Yeah, exactly.
You weren't going to befriend me as a child.
We should get to the content.
Let's do it.
Is this content like what we've been doing?
No, this is fodder.
It's fluff.
This is what people really tune in for.
The fluff?
Hey, how many people have already fast-forwarded through all of this to get to the content today?
I don't know if they have. They're already in the future, so it doesn't really matter.
We have a lot of listeners these days. Our numbers keep on getting better, and I thank the listeners right now for that because you're spreading it around. You're telling other pastors about it. You're getting the word out, and we appreciate that.
And from Iowa, we're used to stuff being spread around.
That's true.
You know, so we're just providing more of it.
Yikes.
To be spread around.
Yikes. I'm trying to tell them, keep sharing the podcast here.
Hey, the sign on our state, the motto on our state signs when you come in to the state of Iowa, it says Fields of Opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's, you know, we're spreading good stuff around.
We're helping people grow. We're the manure that helps people grow.
There you go. We better move fast through this.
That's a new tagline. You had a conversation with a missionary. Melanie.
Yes, Melanie.
Yeah, I wasn't here. Abram had just been born, and I was on sabbatical, which I was very grateful that the church gave me a month for that, which was fantastic. And so you had the opportunity to talk to this missionary. She and her husband and their kids were here, and you had a chance to sit down with her and have a conversation.
The interesting
sounds
thing,
like it was really good.
You know, I have expected the husband to just kind of assume the role of being the one to come and talk on the podcast, but his native language isn't English.
Ah.
So, you see, he wasn't that comfortable having to talk off the cuff.
That's interesting.
In English, even though he's been speaking English for, you know, years and years.
Yeah.
So his wife comes down into the luxurious and opulent 200 Churches Podcast studio.
Mahogany gilded, yeah.
And, I mean, she had her white glove, and she checked. I mean, there wasn't a thing on the white glove. Anyway, it was really interesting because what it turned out to be is a young missionary mom speaking freely to small church pastors.
That's great.
I said to her, what do pastors do that is not helpful for you? What do churches do that's not helpful to you and your family when you show up for like a missions conference or weekend or whatever? And she told me. I said, how can churches and pastors be more helpful? And she told me. I said, what were some things that were weird for you in a foreign context and in a foreign culture that you had to get used to? And she told me. And I said to her,
how is
it for you as a mom to bring your young kids into different church after different church? And what is that like? And she told me. So This is a primer on how to handle young couples who are missionaries, especially young missionary couples with small children. This is going to tell you exactly what to do and how to handle that young couple and how to minister to them while they're trying to minister to you.
That's really great information, and that's so helpful, I think, for pastors of small churches, and I will say for missionary committees. I don't want to paint with too broad of a brush, but I think generally missions committees in churches tend to be made up of retired people, older people,
people who
have been doing that for a long time. Our Ladies Missionary Connection is more in that demographic, right, at our church. There's nothing wrong with that. It's fantastic. But top of mind might not be, well, how do we treat a family who comes and they have little kids, you know, a missionary who comes with little kids. So the snippets that you showed me of this podcast were great. I can't wait for it to be produced. I feel like we should get out of the way and just let her talk.
And you talk about the older members, and I'm thinking, okay, you mean 82-year-old Dottie, who sits on the missions committee, didn't have the same needs when she was raising her kids that Melanie has now?
Well, I'm saying, even if she did, which things have changed a lot.
They have? I mean, Dottie doesn't think so.
But even if they have, Dottie doesn't remember what
Dottie
it's like to have little
kids.
Dottie raised
8 kids on the farm.
Yeah, I'm telling you, Dottie doesn't remember raising those 8 kids. That's what I'm telling you.
I don't remember raising my 4 kids.
You're 53 years old, so it's like it's nothing against Dottie.
So
that's what I'm saying.
I would, if I was a small church pastor, by the way, I am.
You are.
I would give this to my missions team.
You're an expert.
I would give this to my missions team and let them listen to it.
Yeah.
Because it will change the way they look at a young couple with small children who come in trying to give a missions report or whatever else.
Listen up. This is Jeff and Melanie. They had a really great discussion, and I think it's going to bless you a lot in your small church. So, give it a listen.
Melanie, thank you for joining us on the 200 Churches podcast.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. You didn't know that you were going to be a big-time radio producer when you came to Orange City, did you?
No, actually, I had no idea that this even existed. I'm really glad to even find it. We've subscribed now. We're excited to hear what you guys are doing. And
All right. So we actually have to bring people to our church to get new subscriptions.
Okay.
But we'll do anything.
Well, we'll pass the word too. So.
All right. So you're here with your husband, Jose. You're an international worker with our denomination, mm-hmm. the Christian and Missionary Alliance. So tell us about your family, maybe a little bit about where you grew up and what your history is.
Okay. My husband and I have 2 children. We have Josiah, who's 3.5, and Ian, who's 2. They both actually were born in Berlin, where we're working in Northeast Germany. So that was part of our time overseas.
So now in the political world, this is a big thing now, where people were born and where their citizenship is.
Oh, right.
So how does that fall with your boys?
Well, we actually didn't live in Germany long enough for them to be dual citizens.
Okay.
So they are American citizens. You have to go downtown and register them, and there's a lot of paperwork.
So can they run for president someday? That's the question. You don't know.
Probably, actually. Probably. I mean, it would be kind of like being born on a military base.
Okay.
As long as you have their birth documented, they are U.S. citizens because both parents are U.S. citizens.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So your 2 boys were born in Berlin.
Yes. My husband was born in Guatemala. He's from Guatemala City. And so his first language is Spanish. And then I was born in Florida, but grew up in Asheville, North Carolina. And through a series of events, I went to Georgia for college, Toccoa Falls, which is also with our denomination. And then ended up overseas as an apprentice for 2 years in Paraguay, South America.
Okay.
My husband and I met in Costa Rica. So a lot of countries involved at this point.
So for us who don't know where these places are, where is Guatemala and where is Costa Rica?
Okay. Guatemala is the country after Mexico.
Okay.
And then Costa Rica is the connecting country from Central America to South America. So it's right above Colombia.
So it's all in Central America, both of those places.
Those two are, yes. And
okay.
Paraguay is in the southern cone of South America, so it's beside Argentina, between Argentina and Brazil.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you met in Costa Rica?
We met in Costa Rica. My husband was finishing seminary there. He lived in Costa Rica for 8 years. And the year I went, I was actually in formal language study to learn Spanish formally. And so, we met, and the rest is history.
And what happened was you were studying a lesson, and he was just reading the lesson, and it said, "Will you marry me?" in Spanish. And you just said yes, and then the rest is history.
Well, actually, I went to youth group. In Latin America, as long as you're under 40 and single, yeah, you go to youth group.
Right.
So we never dated. We were just friends. Because of some experiences, was never going to marry a Latino. And we were just really good friends, and God actually kind of spoke to both of us, and he proposed, and I said yes, and then we ended up getting married in the States just about a year and a half later.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. So in Central America, if you're single and you're under 40,
yeah,
you're part of the youth group.
Yes.
What do they actually call it? What's it called in
Grupo
Spanish?
Grupo de Jóvenes, youth group. But
okay,
it is divided. There's the middle school part, there's the high school part, there's the college part, and then there's the career and beyond.
Okay, but you don't get pushed out of the youth ministry just because you graduate from high school.
No, it's an extension. I think some churches would call it singles ministry or young adults ministry.
Okay.
I've
heard of that before in the context that we sometimes get it wrong, a lot of times get it wrong in America, where after high school, you know, they go off to college, and then
right,
and then if they happen to come back or if they don't leave, there still really isn't any spot for them.
Right.
And very few churches are large enough to have a good singles ministry.
There's that aspect of it, and there's also the aspect that some of them don't feel like there are any peers at their church, and so they just don't go back to church. That is a big struggle in the American church today.
So the reason I have any guests on, and the thing that Johnny and I always talk about, is our goal is to encourage pastors of small churches.
Yes.
I think about people and I think, okay, what could they say? If I had a conversation with them, what could they say that would be helpful to a small church pastor? So you're on the other side of the pastor international worker chasm, so to speak. You
right.
know? So how many terms have you been on the field, like officially as an official international worker?
Not counting my apprenticeship and our time overseas, actually as church planting international workers, we have just completed our first term.
Okay, so that's 4 years.
Yes.
And then before that, you did an apprenticeship.
Yes.
And something else?
Apprenticeship and then language school that in Costa Rica, I was returning to Paraguay. So that was my first year of my first term. And then my husband, actually, while he was in seminary, was a pastor for 8 years. The program that he was part of had them actually pastoring while they were learning about being pastors.
Okay.
So, yes.
Good idea, by the way, right?
Mm-hmm. I think
actually,
so, yeah.
Doing it while you're learning how to do it. Mm-hmm. So how many times, do you have any idea how many churches you and your husband have now gone into as, you know, returning from the field and just visiting, maybe a couple dozen?
No, actually, this year for us, it's probably been close to 60.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So what is the biggest misperception that, now not church people,
right,
but what is the biggest misperception that pastors in churches, do you think, have about missionaries that are off the field that are coming to the church to visit? That may not be, that's a hard question probably, because
yeah,
I'm not asking you to dump on us, you know,
right,
as pastors,
right,
but what is the thing that you feel like maybe us pastors don't, we're not really thinking about when we have missionaries coming in?
Well, to be very honest, I think part of our coming back to the States is for us to have a little bit of a furlough, which is typically a break from normal ministry for us, which is ministry overseas in a different language and a different culture. And so our break comes in the form of being able to operate in English and to serve and encourage people in churches that are of our first culture. Well, my family is a little bit different. We're a multicultural family. And so in our case, one of our home cultures. But I think there tends to be the thought that it's a year-long vacation or just a year-long sabbatical. And that's actually not the case. We do quite a lot of ministry during our time in the States. And we love doing that. But we also really need those times where when we go to a church, You all actually have done a really great job of this. Where
oh, phew, that was close.
We yeah,
I was nervous.
Yeah. Well, you come in and there's almost equal amounts of, you know what? We really want you to be together with your family and rest a little bit and just enjoy what our town has, and we want you to be speaking and interacting with these groups of people. Obviously, what we're doing overseas for most international workers is our passion. That's why we're doing it. That's why we continue to do it. That's why we return to the field. And because of that, we want to talk about it. We want to share about it. And we want other people to join us in that. We want to encourage churches to get on board and even send teams and things like that. But oftentimes, I think like anyone in ministry, we see the needs are so great and we have a hard time setting good boundaries to take a break. And so I think for us coming in where there's something already kind of set up and them saying, okay, this period of time, it's your downtime, or this period of time, we don't have anything scheduled for you.
Here's what I'm hearing you say is that when you're in ministry overseas, it's hard sometimes to know the difference between how much rest you need and how much ministry you need. The demands of
right.
cross-cultural ministry are more,
right.
and you get a little more exhausted probably more quickly,
yes.
at least in the first year probably of your return to the field. But then when you go to a church, it would be nice if the church, pastor, missions committee, whatever, would schedule your time for you and schedule you rest times so that you're not feeling like you've got to tell the committee or the church or the pastor, hey, I've been a little busy. Could we get a little an afternoon off, or maybe
right.
can we sleep in tomorrow morning
because
yes. you've got your two little boys?
Yes. There's also ministry time. When you are speaking at night and then you have a breakfast meeting with someone, then you're having lunch and you're having dinner and then maybe an evening service. We've actually been in churches where we've done that. You can do that well for about a week, but you also need to refresh spiritually and just have time to just kind of pull away, just kind of ask the Lord to refill you. So there's a lot of pouring out that happens. And so even spiritually recharging as well as the physical and emotional recharging.
And what you said at the beginning was that sometimes maybe us pastors can have the impression that, oh, you've got a year off.
Yes.
You're back in the States. You get a year of vacation. Sure wish I had a year off every fifth year, right? Every
right.
4 years, I wish I had a year off of church ministry, right?
Right.
But it's not actually a year off. It's a time for you to plug back into your culture, plug back into your language, connect with family, and then do all the other stuff that's required of you in the short amount of time, really, that you've got
right.
back in the States.
Right. And another aspect is fundraising. Another aspect is partnerships. And so those are also things that during that year we do so that we can return to the field. I mean, in no way do I want to complain about this year. I think the blessing is mutual. We get very encouraged to be able to worship in our own language. We get very encouraged to be part of a community of believers, because oftentimes overseas, we are the believers. We are the ones that are trying to teach new believers or pre-believers what that community looks like. And so to be able, even before we get up to speak or whatever, to sit in the congregation and just participate in worship, those things are huge blessings to us.
One of the things that I've tried to do since I've been at this church is when we have missionaries come, generally they're on like a 6 to 10 week tour
yes.
of a different mm-hmm. church every week. And
yes.
the fun thing I always do is I always tell our missionaries, our goal is that your week with us will be your favorite week on tour. So we want to beat out the other churches, right?
Okay.
So that this
yeah.
is your thing. And we actually try to give them a lot of just time just to themselves, just time to relax. We generally don't schedule breakfast meetings.
Right.
We'll sometimes schedule lunch meetings and sometimes dinner meetings, but not even both every day.
Right.
And we just try to give them just time, and then also have our people relate to them on spend time with them on a relational level, where they're not in a group where they're answering questions, but they're just getting to know our couples and maybe being in a small group, maybe not. but just a time for us to build into the missionaries. So I would encourage, you know, other pastors, obviously, to do that when missionaries come. You know, you want to get the benefit of having them there, but I think we as churches want to benefit missionaries too, that they that they would leave more refreshed than when they came, or if not more refreshed physically, at least more encouraged,
right?
You know, and inspired.
I think one thing that we really appreciated, I mean, before our visit, I gave you a call and we talked about what our time would look like. And so what I'm saying may not be what every international worker wants or needs, but I think the key is communication. When you all communicated to us, we would like to make sure that you have some downtime. We would like to make sure that you get to do something fun with your family. We also would like for you to speak with small groups and to preach on Sunday morning. The communication is key. I think we've been in situations this year where there's really not a lot of communication, and that can be very stressful for an international worker coming in, not knowing what the church's expectations are. We've also been overscheduled, and there's the anxiety or the stress or burden of kind of feeling like, well, can I say something about this, or is this just what I need to do? And so when there's a dialogue, that really gives, I think it really helps the church with what the church needs are, and it really helps the international worker with what we have to give and what our needs are. Another thing that comes to mind is that I think sometimes the perception is that the international worker comes to take from the church. I know that there are cases where that is true, where the international worker comes and maybe they're fundraising or maybe they have a need and they come kind of like the hero for the week and then they leave.
Yeah.
But one thing I think in general across the board is that there are a lot of international workers whose intention is also to really connect with the pastor, connect with the leader, to have an opportunity to sit down for coffee or to have a conversation or just to pray. Because we also recognize that oftentimes international workers do have member care in some form or another, but there are a lot of pastors that don't have any care. And so that's something that when we come, we also want to give, not just to the congregation, but to the leadership. That communication also just, it helps with the relationship. It also helps with just the flow of the week as well.
So here's what I've learned from what you've just said. I'm the type of person that I'm very flexible. So I don't need to be highly structured in a situation to be able to just turn on a dime and do whatever. But for the missionary or the international worker who is just a little more organized, you know, that stressed out by a lack of details, it's okay if I don't give details to somebody who's like me.
Right.
You know, they can just kind of fly by the seat of their pants. But now I'm thinking about your husband. His first language is not English.
Right.
So he's probably just naturally a little bit more under the gun having to communicate publicly in English.
Right.
And if he had time to think about the settings that he would be put in, he'd be a little less stressed, a little more at ease, and maybe a little more prepared.
Right.
You know, even for himself. So those are some things that I think probably, I mean, I don't always think about.
Right.
With missionaries, their personality, what they need. And if they need more communication and I don't, but I better give it to them or I'm just stressing out missionaries who ought to be coming to be refreshed.
I would say, yeah, that's true. I think also one thing that really helps is knowing more or less how many messages we need to prepare. If we're going to speak in, let's just say, four different small groups, if there's any overlap, we need to have a different message.
Okay.
But if it's four different groups of people, we can use the same message. And so it's exactly what you're saying as far as just kind of knowing. Oftentimes, international workers are not able to go and visit as families. This case has been an exception for us. And so it's very easy for me. I have three or four messages that I've prepared that I kind of rotate through as I've traveled and spoken. My husband has about three or four. And so when we as a family are together and we find ourselves in a situation where, okay, we need to give a different message, we can switch. If it's one international worker, they may need to know, okay, I'm preparing five messages for this week. I can use three that I've already prepared, but then I need to have two more at least in mind. And it's exactly what you said. Some international workers can just tell some stories from the field, and they're fine on the spot. Some international workers are literally shaking in their boots when you say it's going to be an interview. So I think a lot of it's communication, and I think it's people skills, just saying, what do you need from us? That's helpful. It gives us an open door to talk about maybe what our personality is like in ministry. It's also fair for the church to say, this is what we have in mind for you, and then come to a conclusion of the week. So there's kind of a partnership in planning the time together. Those have been our best experiences.
You got two little boys.
Yes.
Both 4 and under.
Yes.
And what are the types of things that you're thinking about as a mom and also as an international worker who's going to share? You're not just there with your husband.
Right.
But you're there as a family and you're both going to speak. What are the things that you think about? Don't tell me as a pastor how to think about you coming, but just from your own, as a mom, what are you thinking about when you're going to a church with your two little boys?
Okay. So wherever we're staying, kind of my process of getting out the door to getting to the church to the event, I'm thinking, do I know where my children are going to be for this time that the speaking is taking place, especially if I'm speaking? Are there going to be toys for them to play with? Is there going to be something for them to do? Is there going to be childcare? Is there somebody that I've met or that I will meet that they can kind of watch our kids for us? I'm thinking, what time is the event? My children go to bed pretty early. And so I'm also thinking, is this going to be in the middle of their bedtime? My children, thankfully, we've prayed a lot. They do really well with being flexible about that. But it also means I need to have more activities prepared if it's going to be during bedtime. I'm thinking about if we have something at night that's late, 3 or 4 nights of that in a row is too much for my children. Or if we have something late one night and then a breakfast the next morning, it's too much for them. And so we as moms and as parents, I think we are the ones that have to know when our children need to pull back or when we as a family need to pull them back so that they can also be healthy. I think it's across the board as a mom, if your children are not okay, there's some stress that you're carrying with you and your mind is not fully on what you're doing.
How have you found the churches to be generally? Are they pretty much accommodating? Or have you run into any like nightmare scenarios?
I would say very few nightmare scenarios, but there have been some where I'm sitting in the back when my husband is speaking and we travel with little bags of toys. So they're playing and then they're being loud. There's nowhere else to take them. And then we switch. And so then my husband's coming back, but there's no one to be with them. And so it can be a meltdown situation. And then we're apologizing because our kids are losing it. But it's their bedtime.
What kind of parents are you anyway?
I know, right?
So you said you don't always travel together, though. So in that case, you were both there, and somehow it was like a tag team thing.
Yes.
So the kids are in the back row, and you've got to tag your husband somewhere in the middle and hope they don't melt down while you guys are finishing the transition. But a lot of times you don't do this together.
That's right.
So you've been off now for maybe like 11 months, you know, almost a year.
Right.
And you were talking about how much time you've actually had to spend apart.
Yes.
As a married couple in your time. How long has that been and what has that been like?
The time that we've spent apart has been about, if you add it all together, 5 months.
Almost half
of
the time.
And that is very difficult. Children need their daddies. That's one of the huge realities. And it really gives me a new respect for single moms. There have been a couple comments this year of, well, you're just a single mom. And I'm thinking, no, I can call my husband at any time.
Yeah.
My children can FaceTime with my husband. But it's not the same as him being there. And so that's something that caught us a little bit unaware coming back this year of how that looked like, what that looked like. And we're very thankful that we have a good home church that we're part of, that they kind of step in to fill some of the gaps. I remember one Sunday specifically when it took 4 people to get me and my children and all of our stuff to our car, and they did it. And it was just the grace of God. But there's also Sundays where as a mom, you're thinking, my husband's not here. Are we going to be able to make it today? Can I get my kids to church, go to church, be in the service, or is it better to stay home and watch something on television as far as a sermon on TV? Oftentimes, third culture kids or missionary kids have anxiety or separation issues. In our case, specifically in Germany, babysitting is not really a thing. And so we had to wean our children into Sunday school in the nursery.
So they're not separated from you in Germany?
No. No, they're not. And that's a different ministry challenge altogether, especially when you're basically ministering to families around the same age as, you know, with kids the same age as your kids. It brings a whole different set of challenges. But when you're in the States, and in the United States, people just say, oh, yeah, just take your kids to the nursery. Well, our kids have a panic attack. Well, where's my mom? My dad is already gone. And don't realize, especially when they're this little, that my mom will come back in an hour or in 30 minutes or whatever. And so we really had to work with our children and give them time to adjust to the situation where they could feel confident that, yes, my mom is going to come back for me and I want to go. We were very careful to not push our children to go. So there were many Sundays where I would sit in the service for as long as one of my children would be quiet, and then we would go home because he wasn't ready yet. So,
what kind of a missionary are you?
I know.
Leaving early like that. Don't you know everybody's watching and adjusting
their
support levels?
Well, we sit
levels?
In the back. We sit in the back actually for that purpose. You know, they say that, I guess, the rebellious sit in the back. I don't know. Maybe that's not true anymore.
No, or the parents of young children.
Yes, I mean, that's true.
We have the exact same thing. My wife will say to me, hey, did you hear so-and-so screaming and they had to be taken out? And I'm like, honestly, hon, I didn't hear it, because when I'm preaching, I have to tune out all that stuff, or I'd be watching everybody wiping their nose and getting up and walking
off.
You're
in the zone.
So, yeah, parents with little children definitely sit in the back. So that's what it's like for you when your husband's gone.
Right.
You just have to figure it out.
Right.
And that, for you, that was 5 months
right.
out of this furlough.
Yes.
As pastors, we don't have to leave our wives.
Right.
I don't think ever that long.
Right.
To go speak in other churches. What kind of a ripoff is that?
Well,
I mean, what kind
of
a denomination are we serving in here?
Yeah, it's definitely part of the sacrifice. And I think that's one thing that when we go to places and people are recognizing the sacrifice, that not only do we live overseas in a different context. Now, Germany is first world. So when I say sacrifice, I'm not talking about material things. I'm talking about our native language and our communities,
our culture
and other things.
Which those of us who've never left our native culture and our native tongue, we really don't understand it, do we?
Right.
We honestly, you're smiling.
Yes,
you're like,
I am. It's so
I don't want
true.
To call you a loser, but you know, you really don't understand it. I mean, to be somewhere where they don't speak your language.
Right.
And they do things that are so weird.
Yes.
Why do they keep doing that? What was something like when you went over to Germany? Now, you're in East Germany.
Yes,
right?
We're in former East Germany. That's right. Our team serves in Northeast Germany.
Which is different yet from West Germany.
Yes.
And what, like, just name like a something cultural that you were just like, oh, this is uncomfortable for me.
I can tell you right off the bat, from day one, I actually come from German descendants.
Okay.
My great-grandfather was actually born in Germany, in Berlin, where we're serving. And one of the big things is people look at me and they think that I'm German. So right off the bat, they will speak to me in German, and I did not grow up learning German or speaking German. So that was uncomfortable. But then we would get on the train. And Berlin is very international, very multicultural, lots of ethnicities, lots of color as far as people. And one of the big things is people stare on the trains. They just straight out stare at you. And in the States, that's not polite.
Right, right.
And when you see them staring at you, they don't break eye contact. It is the most awkward thing. And they're just watching you. And if you're having a conversation, it almost creates this paranoia of what am I doing, you know? But then you realize,
what are you looking at?
They're all doing it, so it's normal. You can people watch and just straight out stare at people too,
and it's they don't think anything of it.
No they don't not in public. Now we also live in apartment buildings, and another really weird thing for us is most of the bathrooms over the tub have a window.
It's frosted though, right?
No, it's not.
Oh, it's not frosted.
We actually put like the frosting paper on ours and a curtain, but a lot of our neighbors didn't. And so it's not appropriate to stare out your windows in your apartment. But on the trains, you know, go for it. We actually would joke that one of our children, he would stare at people. Most little kids do. And we would just, instead of correcting him, we would just laugh and say, oh, he's Berliner.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, what are you correcting him for, right?
I know. Everybody else culture. Is doing it. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That would be, how would you like to go out in public and just have people stare at you?
It's bizarre.
At least for us, when you look at somebody, they'll look away.
Right.
I mean, that's a good, you know, way to do it. And I always say, coming from New York State, if you're there, you're walking down this sidewalk and... Now, New York City is probably a little different. They're probably friendlier, actually. But in Western New York, if you're walking on the sidewalk, you generally don't make eye contact.
Right, right.
Unless you want to have to greet somebody, just don't make eye contact, keep on going, and don't pay any attention. So that would be uncomfortable for me to have people staring.
Well, and what you're saying is true. We live in the city. So walking down the sidewalks, you're not really, I mean, you look at people and maybe you wave if it's, you know, if they have a little kid or something like that. Once you get to know Germans, they're very friendly, but they do come off as not being very friendly initially. But another odd thing is that you don't really greet the people that live on your same floor because you share walls. So it's too intimate to also greet them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's you hear a
Which
lot.
Which is just the opposite in America, right?
Right, right.
You would know the people on your floor, but you wouldn't talk to the people in, you know, in other parts of the building.
Right.
Very interesting. So for those of us who are pastors who get to take vacations in our own culture and live in our own culture, minister in our own culture, we really can't appreciate unless we go out of it for, what would you say, at least a month?
I don't think it even takes that long.
No.
One of our biggest things that we've been talking with pastors and churches as we've been home this year is take a vision trip, 5 to 10 days. A vision trip is not a waste of time or of money because you're coming into another culture. A lot of what we like to do on a vision trip is you kind of just come alongside of us for what our life looks like for those 5 or 10 days. Come and attend ministries and participate, maybe prayer walking in our context. There's a lot of opportunities, but I think the biggest thing is if you're there for 5 days, living our life with us and not just doing a tourist thing, you will experience culture shock. You will experience the frustration of, I cannot say anything to these people, and I would love to pray for them, or I would love to say something to them. But without an interpreter, there's usually the inability for that. Yeah. Anywhere from 5 to 10 days is plenty of time. Now, if you want to come for a month and volunteer, and we would love that too.
Just thinking about that as you were saying that, I almost, maybe it's in my mind, but I almost think I got a flash of claustrophobia when you said, you know, you want, because I'm an encourager. I love to encourage people, and I love to just say positive things to people. And if I couldn't,
yeah,
that would be weird. If somebody was there and needed a little bit of encouragement, but I couldn't give them anything, I would feel claustrophobic in that
right.
context.
And often that's how we feel in the first 2 years or however long our language training is, because in our case, we learned secular. We learned in a secular language school. And so only by attending a church did we learn how to pray for someone or what do you say that the Bible says? In some senses, it's easier because you have to explain things a lot simpler. You can't use huge vocabulary words about theology or things like that. On the other hand, it's exactly what you're saying. We're going overseas to minister, and that is shut off for a certain amount of time until we're able to speak the language. And so even that experience is very valuable for you to come over and to say, I know how that felt, and then multiply that by 2 years of time or maybe longer, depending on the culture, depending on the person. And then you have a greater understanding not only of how to pray, but how to support and how to partner.
And you just talked about doing secular language study versus learning how to talk to people about spiritual issues, which you wouldn't learn that language in a secular language study class.
Not at all. Not at all.
So that's really interesting. I mean, the only thing I could think of is when I learned Greek, you know, New Testament Greek, that's not language I'm going to use out on the street with anybody.
Right.
I think even if I went to Greece today, you wouldn't use that same language.
Right.
So, yeah, that's really interesting. So you have to do it two-tier.
Right.
Multi-level.
Well, I can talk about our children, for example, or life in Berlin, or greetings, and just general small talk. But when it comes to praying, that's still very difficult for me to do in German. It feels very rigid, and I don't feel the spontaneity of, oh, well, I can just pray this for them, or as the Spirit leads. It's very rigid as far as what I know how to say. And the structure of how you pray is different than how you would just speak to someone. Those are all different things. It's very interesting, because oftentimes people whose second language is English will say the same thing. They have a hard time praying in that language, because prayer is such an intimate conversation. And when you pray, you want to be able to express yourself in whatever words you need to. And so oftentimes you feel more comfortable in your mother tongue.
So we have a woman in our church. She's our financial secretary. She's been with us for about 14 years. And when we pray in our staff meetings, she prays in German, which for the rest of us, you know, we have no idea. You would think after 12 and a half years of hearing her pray in German, I would know something, like even one word.
Yeah.
I don't. I don't know one. I mean, I recognize some of the things that she's saying, but I don't really know what they mean. And when we're done praying, I don't really feel like asking her what certain words mean, because I kind of want to say the words to her and ask her what they mean, but I'm afraid I'm not going to say them right. Right? The whole struggle, yeah, of language. So you're in Germany and you're talking to a person and you have to use your kindergarten and first grade,
right,
you know, goo goo gaga,
yeah,
German talk, and it's hard, isn't it?
It's hard, and in a lot of ways, I think if I were to pray for someone in English, and they say, "Hey, I've got this need, and I want you to pray for healing," well, we just pray, and we pray that the Holy Spirit would fill them, and you just go. And in German, I was in this situation in a church in Cleveland, actually, where there was a German speaking woman. She understood English. She and I had a whole conversation in German, and she asked me to pray for her. And I looked at her and I said, "You understand English, and I really do not have the skills to pray for you how I want to in German. So would you mind if I prayed for you in English?" I knew when I prayed for her in English that she didn't understand the depth of what I was praying for her. Hmm. And that's the other frustrating part, yeah, of part of us praying for someone else is for them to be encouraged and to feel the power of God in the moments that we're praying for them. And that didn't, there was a little bit of break off there.
Yeah. But you get a year off every 4 years.
I know, right?
So it's all good. It's all good. Yeah. Not really. These are really good things for us to be talking about, because I know that there are pastors out there listening, women pastors, who are really enjoying hearing a woman on the 200 Churches podcast. So thank you for contributing in this way.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
But then all kinds of pastors who are hearing stuff and they're saying, "I never really thought about it like that from an international worker, a missionary's perspective," and that's really helpful. So we're gonna wind it down here. But tell me one of the really nice things, maybe one of the nicest things that anybody at any church has done for you in this year that you've been in the States. What's one or two things that just kind of rise to the surface that was just really thoughtful of them?
Well, one thing that happened recently, my husband and my anniversary is April 7th, and we were scheduled to be at a church during that time, thankfully together and not apart. That would have been, I think, even harder.
Yeah.
But we just talked and we said, okay, we'll celebrate our anniversary at another time, because our commitment is to be at this church. And they found out that it was our anniversary. We actually never told them, and they did this whole candlelight potluck. It was really, really sweet, actually. It was a small group that we were scheduled to speak at. We arrived and the whole thing is candlelight, because they just wanted to just say, "Hey, we realize it's your anniversary, and we realize that you're with us, and we really appreciate that." And then they actually gave us some gift cards to go out later.
Oh,
so
nice.
That was really sweet. Another huge thing is when we go to a church and they love on our kids. when they let our kids just run around in the gym or in the fellowship hall and just let them be kids, and we're able to just step back and watch them interact with other people. Or actually, one of the churches did a birthday party for one of our sons and remembered the other son as well. And so those kind of things are just really thoughtful, and it makes it easier to sacrifice those important days in our lives.
You said something yesterday about that kind of struck me, something about your kids having to say goodbye a lot.
Yes.
And it would be nicer if. Share that.
Yeah, our kids are always saying goodbye. I think our lives are full of transition, not just when we come from the field to our home countries. Oftentimes, for third culture kids, our home country is not theirs. So for my children, Berlin is home. And so they've said goodbye to their preschool friends in Berlin. We come to the States. They met my parents in person, my family in person, my husband's family in person. They're meeting new church people. And then we travel. And so we may be at a church for 3 or 4 days or for a week. They're there. They're 100% there. And then it's time to say goodbye. And sometimes the expectation is that our children will give everyone hugs or say goodbye to everybody or do something of that nature. And sometimes it's being asked for from the people. And I understand that that's a polite cultural thing, but a lot of what we've realized is our kids are really tired of saying goodbye. And not that they need to avoid that, that's part of our lives, but goodbye for our children, it doesn't just represent, okay, we had a great time at this church and we'll see you, or maybe we won't see you. It represents, we said goodbye and we're not going to see our grandparents for 5 more years. Or we said goodbye to our friends that we played with every day. Or we said goodbye and our whole life changed in a day because we got off the plane in a different country. And so we really try to protect our children in that way and come up with things of, hey, do you want to give a fist bump or would you like to say goodbye? And if they say no, we leave it and we say goodbye as adults and then it's finished. Or we say, see you later. See you later is a little bit different. It's a way to close and to end well, but it's not a goodbye. And so we really are very aware of the losses that our children accumulate just because this is the life that God's called us to.
And you said that when you come home to your home, right, where you grew up, it's not the home for your kids.
Right.
Right. I think we all experience that as parents to some degree.
Yes.
That the home where my parents live, my kids didn't grow up there. But they've grown up going there.
Right.
You know, at the beginning, every other month they would go. But for you, you've got kids now that are born in Berlin and you bring them back and their home is in another country and in another culture. So you have all of that cross-cultural transitioning stuff to deal with when you go on your 1 year vacation.
I know. Yeah. We do things like keep up every week with Skype with the grandparents. They need to see their grandchildren growing up. So we're very thankful that we're overseas in this age because there's a lot of technology that does make it a little bit easier. Hmm. But it's not the same as being together in person. The trust isn't built up. Our children actually had to stay with my parents for 10 days, pretty early in our stay, because we had a conference that we needed to attend that was no children allowed. And that was very traumatic for our children because they had only seen my parents on Skype. There was no trust relationship built.
Wow.
And so it's hard.
Traumatic for your parents, too.
Right. It's hard for my parents because they feel like they know our children. But again, going back to Berlin, there's not a babysitting culture. So our kids are like, well, are my mom and dad ever coming back? So those are things that are good to keep in mind when it's very innocent and it's very, it's meant well when churches or people in the churches say, okay, now let's say goodbye. But for us, we realize the greater implications of that. And that's a small thing, but for our children, it's a really big thing.
These are a lot of good things to think about, and I know that we've really helped a lot of pastors just think through what they're doing when they have missionaries come. And honestly, it's a little bit of a paradigm shift for me now to think about from your perspective, you have to wonder about pastors who look at you and say, oh, it must be nice to have your furlough, your home visit, your time off, when it really, in many cases, is anything but that.
Right.
It's just that you don't have to swim upstream with the culture and the language.
Right.
But you're just as busy.
And sometimes even busier, because in the States, we're really good at being really busy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then your kids.
Right.
And just all the, and you talked about it being a traumatic experience for your kids to be with your parents for, it was 10 days?
It was 10 days.
So that's traumatic for them, but it's traumatic for your folks.
Yes.
Having their grandsons who don't really know them and aren't like, you know, oh, right. Papa, grand, you know, any yeah. of that stuff.
And it's traumatic for me for because you. I am two plane rides away and I can't leave. So it's traumatic knowing that all you can do is pray, and sometimes calling them is not going to help the situation.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, there's just a lot at play in the year that we're home.
Your husband was probably the least traumatized because he's
he had a really hard time with it, too. I mean, you know, it's family, and that's where he's traumatized, I think, because I am, because, you know, at that point, my child was three and he gets his little stuffed animal and tells my mom, his Nana, I'm going to go find my mom and dad, and leaves the house, you know, and you're just thinking, wow, there's no one there to comfort him. And for my husband realizing that I can't fully be where we were, and for him being distracted too, of are our kids all right? Are they going to be all right? My parents did a great job, obviously taking care of them, but it's a totally different caregiver role than just having the grandkids over for a week or two.
Well, I feel a little guilty, like I've stolen another hour of your time away.
No, so we did this willingly.
We're gonna cut this off, but
okay.
you've given us a lot of good things to think about, and hopefully, pastors, you will have heard something, and you'll say, wow, this is something that I've got. Maybe you've got missionaries coming in a week or a month from now, and it might change what you do. And so the first thing you got to do, communicate with them.
Yes.
Second thing, get prepared. Send them a schedule. Let them know the audience. You know, I've heard this. They always want to know what audiences they're going to be speaking to. I understood it, but I never completely understood it the way you're explaining it. Like if there's any overlap and if they need new lessons for those things.
Yeah, and it's different if you're going to speak to the Sunday school or if you're going to speak to the senior citizens Sunday school class.
Yeah, and find a good place for them to stay.
Yes.
A place that if they got little kids, that's somewhat kid-friendly.
Yes.
Now, the lady you stayed with pulled out all of her boys. She had two boys.
Oh, yeah.
Just like you. And she kept all the toys.
Yeah, it's actually been fantastic. And they've been very, very gracious. Our kids go up and say, hey, will you play with me? And they just jump right in. And for us, it's also been a huge blessing that we don't feel that, oh, no, we're kind of taking over their house or whatever. Yeah. We just feel very free. And that's been a blessing.
Well, thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. And the Lord bless you guys.
Man, Johnny, I wish I had a year off every 4 years. I mean, wouldn't it be nice? I wish I was a missionary.
Yeah.
Get to travel to exotic places.
Easy peasy life over there.
Yeah, I mean, you're on the beaches, beach evangelism, getting the rays, and I just wish I was had the life of Riley like missionaries do.
Yeah, right. I think she kind of blew that out of the water, didn't she?
Didn't she? She really did.
She kind of took that whole idea and threw some cold water on it.
Honestly, let me just be honest. There was before I talked to her in the back of my mind this thing that missionaries get a break every 4 years. But that year is hopefully they can get some kind of a break in that year. But often, much of that year is difficult in just a different way, and sometimes even busier than their normal missionary life.
You know, it's interesting. I remember Phil being on the podcast, the missionary that we had a while back, and saying, what people don't realize about missions is you're just trying to survive. You're out doing life. So it's not as though, for four straight years on the missions field, they don't get weekends. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
They're in a different culture. Always being watched, always being stared at on the train, right? Trying to build relationships with people who don't want to talk to them in the halls because they share walls. Do you know what I mean?
I think I said at some point in the episode, I said something like, I basically implied that people that are outside of America are weird.
That sounds like something you would do.
Yeah.
I'm sure all of our listeners in Germany and Australia and all these other places appreciated that.
Well, I officially distanced myself from my own words. And if there's any apologies needed, I would gladly give them.
It's just not our culture, right? So 4 years, even the fact that it's the year back is hard, that's 4 years without a break in so many ways. So we really love and respect what missionaries do. We're part of a denomination that really takes care of its missionaries. Missionaries in the name of the denomination, you know what I mean? And so we're always glad to be able to get a missionary on because we think it helps you as a small church pastor know how to love and respond to them better, and we know that that's your heart.
Think about how our society has changed in the last 15 years. So if you leave for 4 years and then you drop back in, wow, everything is different in 4 years.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it's a lot different.
For sure. Well, Jeff, I just want to real quick make a plug. How organic is that I said I was going to make a plug?
That's pretty organic.
Yeah, I thought so. If you're not on our mailing list, we have fixed up our mailing list. We fixed it up. We were sending ugly emails. We talked about this last week. We were sending terrible emails. Our emails are a lot cleaner, a lot better, a lot easier for you to get to what you want. And we would love for you to sign up for our mailing list and be able to get into your inbox every week, the podcast and maybe other encouragement that we would have for you. And then we would also love if you would share this with your friend. We love when you help us out, right? We feel like we've done 179 episodes of this podcast. And we love helping you out. And when you guys help us out, I mean, it means the world. Ratings and reviews on iTunes, subscribing to the mailing list, sharing this with your friends, all of that is super helpful, and we really appreciate it.
Now that you've asked me to do it, I don't want to do it.
That's the way it goes.
No, I was going to do it out of the goodness of my
heart.
But
now you don't want to do it.
And now it's like, okay, if we give you 179 episodes, you better do something for
us. Not like that.
Quid pro quo there.
That's not, there's a little, no, I'm just kidding. No, it's not like that at all.
No, the truth is, if all of you as subscribers would share the podcast and share 200churches.com with others, that's something we just can't do.
We can't.
I mean, we could if we had thousands upon thousands to put into Facebook advertising or some other online marketing scheme.
Sure.
But we're not, if you haven't noticed, we're not into the schemes. We kind of want to do this like
bad schemers.
Relationship driven. And it really, honestly, we've grown one at a time over the last almost 4 years. So we would love for you to do all of those things.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you're not getting our emails, just check your promotions folder or your scam folder.
Scam.
Or spam, whatever that is. Probably ours is probably in the scam folder.
Probably, yeah.
And maybe you need to just say, hey, it's okay to put this in my inbox.
Yeah, that'd be great. So anyways, we appreciate you listening. Thank you to Melanie for being on the podcast. She did such an excellent job and really helpful advice. So again, share this with your missions board, share this with your missions committee, and I'm sure that they will appreciate it as well. And we will see you next week for episode 180 of the 200 Churches podcast.
We hope you've been encouraged and inspired by this episode of the 200 Churches podcast. If you haven't already, subscribe at 200churches.com and receive the guy's free PDF download called Our 7 Favorite Ministry Resources. You can count on us to be back next Wednesday with another brand new shiny episode just for you. Until then, may God bless you as you lead and love the people in your 200 church.
So this is going to be the intro.
It's going to be the best intro we've ever done.
So you start.
Okay. How do we say your name?
Yeah, let's not say your last name.
Oh.
It's Melanie.
It's not a creative access.
Yeah, but I'm not going to put their last name in.
All right.
We're just going to do Melanie.
Melanie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I tell you what kind of movement you need. Why don't you step into the next room? That's going to be deleted.
This is the 200 Churches podcast. We're glad you're here with us today.
Let's start over.
Come on. That was flipping gold.
You think it was gold?
I thought it was funny, but if we've become the serious podcast, we can start over. You want to start over?
It's all right here on episode 51 of the series 200 Churches podcast.
We have to do a secondary podcast. We had that listener who was like, they joke around a lot, but once they get to the content, it's good.
Well, it's just that I don't want to have to clip through all this now.
Fine.
But so
fine.
You can redo.
It was money. I'm